room just went.
Somebody clapped. Oh,
good morning.
Well, I tell you.
What's your
such
what's
power?
We're obedient.
Good morning. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order this morning. Have a little bit of work and a lot of signed up to testify on at least one of our bills. So we're going to proceed with a couple of work sessions today. We will not be working House Bill 2214 this morning, and it is my intent to adopt a couple of amendments to 268 or a amendment to 2618 and 2684 each, and we will be working House Bill 2567, so it shouldn't take too long, I don't think. So with that, I will open a work session on House Bill 2567.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure was before you on February 4th. I'm going to talk about the proposed Dash 2 amendment because it replaces the original bill. It allows a distillery licensee to buy and sell bulk distilled liquor from one or another distillery licensee for the purpose of blending. It allows a distillery licensee to pour tastings of products approved for sale by the OLCC and that are manufactured in Oregon by a distillery licensee or another distillery licensee. It also allows more than one distillery licensee to use the same premises at the same time for conducting tastings, deletes requirement that the liquor for tasting be purchased from the OLCC. It allows retail agent to sell only liquor manufactured in Oregon and approved for sale by the OLCC. It allows retail outlet agent to sell at retail liquor manufactured by another distillery retail outlet agent. It expands the activities allowed under the special events distillery licensee for the tasting, the sales by the glass or the bottle of liquor manufactured in Oregon. Also expands where special events can be held to include the distillery, declares an emergency effective on passage. On the Dash 2 amendment, there's no revenue impact. There is no fiscal impact either.
Thank you. So, on the Dash 2?
Mr. Chair. Chair Hovey, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2567.
Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2567. Is there discussion? Not seeing any. Is there any objection? The amendment is adopted.
Chair Olvey, I move House Bill 2567 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Tim Barton moves House Bill 2567 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Not seeing any. Matthew, can we have a roll call, please?
Representative Beretta?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Bevin?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Aye.
He's a big guy.
Aye.
Representative House?
Aye.
Representative White?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hart?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair Holden?
Aye. House Bill 2567, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor. Representative Barton will carry the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Williams, actually, I think she was the one who worked the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Happy to defer.
Check that. We'll have Representative Williamson carry the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 2567. Open a work session on House Bill 2684.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this makes permanent the provisions that are allowing a retired member of PERS to be employed full-time by the public employer as a nursing instructor or as a trainer for the DPSST without any loss of retirement benefits. The measure was heard by the committee on February 18th, and now you have before you a proposed Dash 1 amendment that rather than making the provisions permanent, it extends the sunset 10 years so that the ability to continue to work unlimited hours would be able to occur until January 2nd, 2026. There are no revenue impacts on that Dash 1 amendment, and there is no fiscal impact either.
Thank you. Motion on the Dash 1?
Chair Hovey, I move Dash 1 amendments be adopted to House Bill 2684.
Representative Barton moves the Dash 1 amendments be adopted to House Bill 2684. Discussion? I'm not seeing any. I just want to thank the proposed amendment. I think it's a good amendment, gives us a chance to deal with the issue of having adequate nursing instructors in the future. So a real important piece, but I'm glad we have an amendment on it so a future legislature can see, you know, whether we need to continue that. So with that, is there any objection to any other discussion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection to adopting the Dash 1 amendment? Not seeing any. The Dash 1 amendment is adopted, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2684. Open a work session on House Bill 2618.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure was before you February 18th. It's a bill that classifies as a police officer under the PERS system any employee of DHS whose duties include the maintaining safety, behavior, and control of the residents of certain residential facilities, and it declares an emergency. You now have before you a proposed Dash 1 amendment that applies the police officer classification to service performed only on or after the effective date. So it does not apply to the service that they have performed prior to passage of the measure. There is no revenue impact on the Dash 1. There is a fiscal impact on the Dash 1, and the bill is being requested to be sent to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Would you like a motion?
Would you like a motion, Mr.
Yes,
Chair?
Yes, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2618.
Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2618. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, any objection to adopting the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2618? Seeing none, the Dash 1 amendment is adopted. And with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2618. That sort of wraps up our work session.
Mm-hmm.
So with... no, I don't. Representative Greenlick, were you here to testify on anything in particular, just hanging out?
Neither.
Neither.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Didn't know that. Mr. Chair, with your...
No.
Excuse me.
Okay.
He's leaving
getting
you
a little out
for
of protocol.
Senior chair.
Looking a little out of protocol here. So, we want to...
Yeah, would you announce we'll do this, and save for last?
Okay, we're going to do House Bill 2211, and then House Bill 2797, and then move on to House Bill 2764, last but not least. So with that, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2211. Jan, could you give us a summary of the bill,
please?
Well,
this is a measure that authorizes the director of DCBS to impose a civil penalty on a service company for workers' compensation claims processing violations. And it specifies that that director may impose only one penalty for each separate violation by an employer, an insurer, managed care organization, or a service company. You have before you a proposed Dash 1 amendment that specifies that the director may assess a penalty against only one party for any particular audit of a service company, and it replaces the term third-party administrator with the term service company.
Thank you. Bill Cross and Larry Bishop, please. Good morning, gentlemen. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Bill Cross, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association. And with me is Larry Bishop, who will explain the bill. We are obviously supporting the bill. We appreciate the introduction. We also are in support of the Dash 1 amendments. Larry, why don't you go ahead?
Good morning. My name is Larry Bishop. I am the compliance specialist for Sedgwick. Service company, we handle claims for both insurers and self-insured employers. So you've already heard the explanation of the bill. Just explain why we're asking for this change. When the Workers' Comp Division audits insurers in particular, there are multiple service companies that are handling those claims. And when the penalties are assessed against the insurers, those penalties need to be allocated between all of the service companies handling the claims, and then we are required then to reimburse the insurance companies. And it's really an administratively difficult process for us to allocate portions of those penalties back to the insurance companies. So this change would allow those penalties to flow directly to us for the performance that we do, and then we would pay those penalties directly and not have to go through that reimbursement process.
Any questions? So are you aware of the Dash 2 amendments?
Mr. Chair, no, we are not.
Okay. Well, I see a Dash 2 on the list.
Oh, maybe there. Mr. Chair, I beg your pardon.
There's no Dash 2.
No. Dash 1.
22. Oh, excuse me. There is no Dash 2. One. Okay, it's just a Dash 1.
At least you got your name right.
Calm down, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
He's awake now.
Seen the Dash 12. Okay.
I forgot to tell you. I forgot to tell you about that one.
That's hilarious.
Gotcha.
Well, since you have no questions, I guess I don't have anything else for you. I appreciate it. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2211? Not seeing any. Thank you very much. With that, I'll close public hearing on House Bill 2211 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2797.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is a measure that requires the subject employer to pay the first installment of a temporary disability compensation in a workers' compensation claim within 14 days after the employer has notice or knowledge of the claim or has notice or knowledge of the employee's disability, whichever occurs later. You have before you a Dash 1 amendment. And instead, it requires the subject employer to pay the first installment within 14 days after the employer has notice or knowledge of the claim and has notice or knowledge of the employee's disability if the medical provider authorizes the payment. And I would like to note for the record, there's a letter of opposition the committee received that's on OLIS, and it's from the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies.
Thank you. I guess we'll have Bill Cross and Larry Bishop and Susan Klein.
Quinones.
Thank you. You'd introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, it's a pleasure being here this morning. And on behalf of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association, to present House Bill 2797. And we are in support of the Dash 1, 2, and 12 amendments. I'll let Larry go ahead and introduce the bill.
Well, I'm still Larry Bishop. I'm still with Sedgwick. So. First, we've had conversations with the Workers' Comp Division. One of the reasons that we wanted this change has to do with audits and difficulty in determining employer date of knowledge. Current law requires that the first payment be issued within 14 days of the employer knowledge date, even where time loss begins after that date within the first 14-day period. So we don't see that there's any change in the entitlement or the amount of benefits that are going to be paid to an injured worker with this change. So essentially what we're saying is that, you know, if the time loss occurs after the employer has knowledge of the claim and it's within the first 14 days, then the worker's first time loss check would be issued 14 days from the date they leave work, understanding that they're going to receive wages by their employer up through the date before they leave work.
I'm Sue Klein-Quinones. I'm with the City of Portland. This revision will allow claims processors to more accurately determine when a first payment is due and also to determine the accuracy of the amount of the first payment.
Thank you. Sure.
And we would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
How do you... questions from the committee?
And, Mr. Chair, committee members, the Dash 1 amendments were are fairly technical and developed after conversations with the Workers' Comp Division to ensure clarity in the bill.
Thank you. And did you say there was a letter of opposition on this bill?
There is. We received it this morning. I believe it's on OLIS now. And it's from the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies. I don't have a copy in my file.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had time to see what the opposition is, so I'm not sure if anybody else is in the room that can comment on that. Doesn't look like it. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2797? Not seeing any, so I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2797. That concludes. We have one more bill to go. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2764.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a measure that modifies the circumstances under which attorney fees may be awarded and the amount of the attorney fees in workers' compensation claims. It requires interest payment on compensable benefits, on attorney fees, penalties, and costs that are withheld pending an appeal. It allows the attorney fees under circumstances for representation related to or before a managed care organization or the director of DCBS. It requires attorney fees awarded to be equal in relation to the fees earned by attorneys for insurers or self-insurers. It directs the board to increase attorney fees biennially by the same rate as the increase that occurs with the average weekly wage. Declares an emergency. There's a proposed -1 amendment that deletes the proposed provision directing the board to increase fees biennially and instead directs the board to review the attorney fees biennially.
Thank you. Looks like Representative Fagan's been busy this morning, and we'll go ahead and allow you to kick this bill off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Shamia Fagan, State Representative for House District 51. This bill, House Bill 2764, is in recognition of the fact that there are certain claims, particularly when it comes to employment-related claims, when workers, particularly injured workers, are trying to simply obtain benefits that are already due to them, their wages, that there's a public policy that favors providing for attorney's fees when they actually are successful in their claim, for the reason that we don't want workers to be out of pocket for something that they already were entitled to in the first place. All that this bill does is expands in certain instances the places where that public policy will apply. I'm going to let my co-panelists give you more detail. I just want to quickly tell you a story about why personally this I've had personal experience with why this is critical. In 2009, my mom, who was a bartender at a bar in East Portland, was injured on the job. She slipped and fell in the parking lot while taking out some trash and hurt her shoulder. And, you know, this is a small bar. They didn't have an HR manager. They basically had bartenders and an owner. And so there was nobody to help walk her through the workers' compensation process. She happened to have a daughter, me, who was a third-year law student. And being a third-year law student, I, of course, knew everything. So when this, you know, the situation was brought to my attention, I said, oh, don't worry, Mom. I'll walk you through it. I've got this. And in my third year law student self, started to walk myself through these statutes and quickly realized I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. So I then proceeded to go to a law professor who attempted to walk me through it. And so then I went to my mom to try and help her figure out how to actually engage the workers' compensation system. And with absolutely no confidence that I was actually giving her what she needed to do, because it is an incredibly complicated statute. So, colleagues, the reason I'm passionate about this bill is if I couldn't help my own mom as a third-year law student with the help of a law professor walk through the process for making sure that she was, you know, entitled to the benefit that she paid for as an employee through the workers' compensation system, I think that it is absolutely worth our consideration that we make sure that other workers who don't have know-it-all third-year law student daughters to be able to actually get the legal help that they need to make sure that they are able to access the benefits the way they've already paid for. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you.
And if you'd introduce yourself before you start, thank you. Whoever wants to go first next.
Okay. Hi. Thank you for your time, committee. My name is Keith Wiggins, and I'm here to tell you a story about how I was injured and support my attorney who has who's been there for me navigating this difficult process. I was injured in September 2011. I was working for a heavy equipment company based out of Salem. I had been a solid employee for this company for quite a while. We were working in Lincoln City, setting a driveway, and we were using very substandard hauling equipment. I ended up getting hurt on this job. Being that it was fall time, I approached SAFE and asked to expedite my surgery so I'd have time off in the winter to heal, which SAFE, you know, they approved very quickly. Unfortunately, my surgery was done on Halloween, and it was an absolute nightmare. It was blotched. I should have been healing very rapidly, but come April, May, still in the same boat, not having any kind of healing. It was a nightmare. I had an issue with the employer and his wife. They disputed my number of hours that I worked. They were trying to dispute the amount of weight that I lifted. Contacted me on two occasions to correct my job description. And I wasn't willing to lie. And that's when I decided to get an attorney. Well, I needed to get back to work, so I approached my doctor and asked to be on a modified work release where I could actually sit on a piece of equipment and continue operating. I was released to full duty on a mistake. And this is where it got messed up. My employer didn't get the modified work release. I was called and told I was fired for lying. I fixed this problem in 15 minutes. It was all taken care of, and they said they couldn't truly trust me. Even though my attorney proved at my hearing, we had to go to hearing for this, that everything was in order, and there was just a simple paper mistake, SAFE decided to cut off my time loss benefits. I needed to work. I wanted to get back to work. I still had an issue with my knee, so I decided to go see a second surgeon. Took him 5 minutes. Said, I can fix this. So I went in for a corrective surgery again in April 2013. All along, we were still fighting for my time loss benefits, which were being withheld. I didn't get anything, not a single penny. SAFE walked away from all this. My attorney finally did take this to court. We did win. And out of all this, she only got $1,500. And she'd been representing me for 2 years, and she's still currently representing me. $1,500. And it come out of my wages, my lost wages that were being withheld from me. My first attorney that was represented left. She left. She saw just how terrible this was, and she now works for the city of Portland. To me, this doesn't make any sense at all. Why am I paying for my attorney out of my wages when they're the one that was making the mistake? So I hope this system gets fixed today. I hope this House bill can get passed, and I thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
All right. Good morning. My name is Julianne Quinn, and I want to thank you for letting us present on this bill today. I am an attorney. I've worked on both the insurance side of workers' compensation and now work on the injured side of workers' compensation. My specialty is appellate work and interpreting statutes and arguing statutes at the court that have been passed by the legislature. I want to give you a little bit of background, and then I'm going to highlight a few aspects of the bill. I'm prepared to answer questions on any aspect of it that you want, but I was just going to go through some highlights. This bill began because most of the fees in workers' compensation are managed through the Workers' Compensation Board. The attorneys in workers' compensation, it's a very unique payment system. We are not allowed to go out and have our clients pay our fees. We are not paid for all fees. Unless the attorney's fees are set forth in the statute, attorneys do not get paid for the work that they do. The Workers' Compensation Board is the entity that regulates most of them, not all of them. I won't discuss the whole gambit. It's a very complex system, and any question you have, the answer is it's complex, but attorney's fees are no different. The Workers' Compensation Board has been asked in the last now 16 years to review the attorney fees. There are some maximum rates. That has not been done. So for now, in a certain portion of the fees, for 16 years, not even a cost of living. That has resulted in a difficult time for the attorneys. This bill is a modest list, a very modest list of areas that it would help if attorneys were paid for the efforts that they do. It has two parts. There's an area where we're asking for assessed fee instead of fees being paid out of the workers' wages. I'd like to go through that one. And then there are areas, the other areas are gaps, simply gaps where attorneys are required to do work but are not paid for that work. So the first area is time loss. You've heard wages, time loss, temporary disability. When an injured worker is injured and off work, there's something called temporary disability or time loss. It's their wage replacement. It's their food. It's their rent. It is only paid at 2/3 of the wages. It's not paid at 100%. It is... when an insurance company has to determine it, it is really in the knowledge of the employer in the insurance company. The employer has the payroll to calculate the wages from. The insurance company has access to the medical doctors to determine if the authorization is there. When it is not paid, it literally means for many clients that they are not paying their food or rent. There are clients that often lose houses, lose all the retirement. I have a client that is living in a trailer, goes couch to couch, is homeless during the litigation process. This is a sacred cow is what I call it. It's a very important part. When an injured worker isn't paid that money, the injured worker has to hire an attorney. You cannot navigate the system without it. And when you hire that attorney, you have to pay 25% of the amount of your wages, of the time loss, if your attorney is successful. Attorneys are only paid if they're successful, and they're only paid when they show that an injured worker is entitled to a benefit and doesn't get it. So the situation that you just heard, one of the areas of the bill would correct that, so that if an attorney proves that the insurance company should have paid the time loss and didn't, then the attorney would get paid an assessed fee. And so this helps relieve the injured worker of having to take some of their bread money, their rent money, and pay it to an attorney when the insurer has the obligation and the ability to determine that correctly. That's probably the most important part of this bill. The other areas of the bill are that I would highlight is, again, because the Workers' Compensation Board is the one that sets the fees, we've asked for a statutory mandate that every 2 years those fees be reviewed. And that's one of the amendments. By the way, the Dash 1 amendments are what we asked for corrections. The initial bill had had two things in it that had this issue in it that we did not intend. But so that the one amendment is for the board simply to review it every 2 years. Please just review it. Let's not get into a situation where we've gone 16 years, which causes some difficulty. The other two areas have to do with benefits for the injured worker. Currently, there's a gap in the statute so that if a doctor is not paid a medical bill or if the bill is paid incorrectly, an attorney will have to work to get those medical bills paid because doctors don't like to see patients who aren't paying their bills. And the statute had exempted, just did not include the proper statutory reference so that if an attorney goes and gets the medical bills paid so that the injured worker can see the doctor, there weren't attorney's fees available to it. That's the 656.248 addition to the statute. So that's an area that we have to work, have to spend some time, and the attorneys don't get paid for that. So we'd like to have that covered. And then another area is the attorneys really really provides some regulation on the insurance companies. And when an insurance company has been determined to have a penalty against it for being unreasonable in failing to pay benefits, or has been awarded an injured worker awarded an attorney fee to pay the attorney, or has been awarded costs because they had to spend money to prove their case, and those are awarded, on a significant number of cases, those fees may be appealed. And then those fees and the penalties and the costs have to be defended by an attorney. If we don't defend them, then we simply would lose that award. We are not paid. Attorneys are not paid to defend those awards. The defense counsel, the insurance counsel, by the way, are paid throughout this. They are allowed to charge by the hour, collect their money on the spot according to a contract they have with the insurance company. Injured workers' attorneys can't do the same. They are not paid until they are successful and the litigation has been completed. And so having to defend that and not be paid for that is an inequity and an incentive for the insurance company simply to litigate. This would eliminate that. There are other provisions in here if you have any particular questions. Some of them are highly technical. I'm glad to go over them, but I wasn't going to bore you with each and every of the details.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Widener.
You could start somewhere else if you want, Mr. Chair. But mine is a question about what we did last session, because you're talking about medical fees and reimbursement there. And I can't remember if it was here or healthcare, but it seems like we passed a bill to allow your private insurance to keep paying if workers' comp or workers' comp would cover, and then private insurance would reimburse if it turned out that it was private insurance. Did we not do something like that last session on that side for injured workers?
What I can say is that, yes, there was some litigation legislation about that. Health insurance covers only a small proportion of the injured workers, and even so, there are continued fights with health insurance companies to get them to pay. Again, an area that an injured worker's attorney is not paid to litigate or to fight, and we spend a lot of time doing that. So that was a helpful, I believe there was something like that, and I'm working on memory here. That is a helpful area, but a lot of workers don't have that insurance available, and it doesn't still cover necessarily cover. That is, not all health insurance will necessarily step up.
I believe you're speaking of House Bill 4104 from 2014, which dealt with interim benefits, which is a different issue than this.
No, I think he might be, but no. I think there was a legislative attempt in that area. What I can say is that many injured workers don't have health insurance, so it's not right. It's not an area that's a total blanket. And that's all I can
Mr. Chair,
say on that.
I can't remember if it was Safe that was first or your private that was first. It seems to me like it should be Safe that was first, then private would reimburse if it wasn't there. But I can't remember what we ended up doing on that. And I was just trying to see if my memory could be jogged from it.
Are you talking about the interim medical benefit statute? That's 656.247. And first of all, what has to happen is the health insurance has to pony up, according to the statute and the rules, has to pony up and pay, issue an explanation of benefits form, and then the injured worker can take that to the Safe Corporation to pay the balance if the claim is ultimately a denied claim. If it is accepted, then the insurance companies are supposed to reimburse the health insurance company, and it's not always done that way. Often they reimburse the doctor, who reimburses the health insurance company, and the co-pays of the injured worker, if they've been paid, sometimes are reimbursed and sometimes are not for those with health insurance, if that's the one you're referring to. There was another bill, though, that addressed some of the issues you talked about.
Just remember we dealt with a few of these last session, so I was hoping we were taking care of a lot of this. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things you jogged my memory. I used to be pretty well versed in those days it was SAIF, which is a long time ago. But we made a statement that the worker pays for the insurance. Has that changed? I'm just curious from my own mind. Has that changed? Because when I was in Wood Products, the employer paid according to their accident rate for every dollar that the employee earned. It would go up according to the number of accidents for a rate. Has that changed any?
No, and I'm not sure what comment I made, if I misspoke in that area, to say that the worker pays the insurance. That's not what I was saying. No, the there are two ways that workers' compensation is paid. One is through the premiums by the employer, and the other is the workers' benefit fund collects an equal amount from the injured worker's paycheck, and the employer matches that on a dollar-for-dollar basis. And that covers some of the excess and own motion additional areas.
Thank you. The follow-up?
Follow-up.
When we say that the worker gets two-thirds, which is what we used to apply to the worker when they were injured. And by the way, being in Wood Product, you'd see some pretty bad injuries. Was that taxable? I believe in those days it was non-taxable.
That's beyond my knowledge. My belief is it's not, but it is offset by any wages, which are taxable. It's offset by unemployment, which I understand is taxable. And I'm guessing, actually, this is my general understanding, but I'm not a tax attorney. So it can be more complex than that. But that's the best I can understand.
Okay. Thank you for clarity.
Other questions of this panel? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment, really. I want to thank the proponents of this bill and Representative Fagan's testimony. I think that this bill is, in some form, is absolutely essential that we pass it this session. It's, and I consider it a top priority. And I, you know, this committee, we deal with a lot of workforce issues, and I kind of see this as a workforce issue in some ways. We deal with apprenticeship, aging workforce, and like Representative Fagan, I come at this from an attorney. I represent injured people for a living. It is my job. However, I don't practice workers' comp, and I never will practice workers' comp. And with and the reason for that, with all due respect to the practitioners in the room, is I think it just doesn't make sense. The economics don't make sense as currently structured. This is not like landlord-tenant law or something right out of law school you can kind of pick up and it's sort of intuitive. This is both, it's first of all, it's procedurally very complex. Look at the chart, the charts. And also, it is medically very complicated to do this well. It's really a very specialized skill set that, because the fees have been largely stagnant for 16 years, there's not a new supply of lawyers going into this field. I don't know of any young lawyer who goes into plaintiff-side workers' comp. And there's a current generation of practitioners who are retiring, and there's not a new supply to fill it out. And so workers are having a harder and harder time finding representation. Again, these workforce issues are, this is kind of another one as I see it. And we really, in order to keep this system stable that we're so proud of, we absolutely have to address this session. So thank you, Representative Fagan and others, for bringing this forward.
Other questions? Not seeing anything. Oh, Representative Fagan, another.
Just a comment, if I might, Mr. Chair. Just kind of to emphasize.
I have a question. Representative Fagan, do you have a comment?
I have a comment, yes. In particular, just to highlight Representative Widener and Representative Esquivel's questions, is this bill is about, because so these things are complex, as is indicated by your questions and the fact that this attorney had the expertise to answer that question. We're, in the current law, we're asking bartenders, regular Oregonians who don't even have the benefit of being legislators to answer these questions themselves because we're not providing for compensation for the attorneys to help them. So I just want to make that point because you guys asked her very complicated questions that she had the knowledge to address. But under the current law, if we don't change it with this statute, we're expecting everyday Oregonians like my mom, who was a, you know, a bartender, to answer these questions themselves. And so that's the point of this bill, is to make sure that there is somebody, and as Representative Barton said, there is a you know, new generation of lawyers, that the economics as small business owners make sense for them to actually do this work, because they can actually be compensated for the expertise that they have to gain. So kind of as a closing comment emphasized by the questions from the panel. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. So, was there another question down there?
Yes.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have worked with SAFE for a lot of years, and we have had many, many injuries. But, you know, it is complicated, but it's also a difficult thing, I think, to keep the cost down for the employers if we don't have a structured system. I mean, if you let the attorneys go wild on this, it's going to create a lot of hardship on the employers. You know, when we have cases that we have turned into SAFE, yes, it affects your experience rating, and your rating goes up if you have a lot of them, and there is great incentives to keep to have safety being a priority there. But it, at the same time, you know, there are some things that I believe in the SAFE system that are unfair. We hired an employee in a month. After we hired him, he had carpal tunnels problems that didn't come from us, but yet it went against our experience rating. Julian, you've been on both sides of, you said you've been on both sides.
Yes.
I mean, I could see this thing kind of just running out of control very easily if you start opening up to more litigation. And the information that we got in our packet from MLAC, you know, has that process not worked since, what was it, 1991, I think, where they kind of had this group that kind of mediated this and brought both parties together?
Well, a few comments to your question. First of all, MLAC is not the organization that has control over the attorney's fees. The Workers' Compensation Board is. MLAC has no authority to require the board to review those fees. And again, this is a complex system, and even MLAC isn't the sole organization. So the answer is no, it can't work to do that. The Workers' Compensation Board has to review that. And then currently this bill is going through MLAC, and the process continues there. We are hopeful with that process. And so, but all that MLAC can do is to review a bill to come to you, but cannot dictate to the Workers' Compensation Board, as I see the jurisdiction. In terms of increased litigation, I do want to comment on that. This system is not like a civil system where you can create a lawsuit. Well, you can't really create a lawsuit, but you can take a good argument to a jury who decides today they're really mad at that employer, will give you an extra few million dollars. It is not, if you have a cynical view of the civil justice system, I don't. But this system has statutorily defined benefits. A worker can't get any more than the statute. You can't go and create litigation if you can even do that in the civil system. If a worker's attorney is being paid, it is because the insurance company first has had the opportunity, has been asked to pay a benefit. They have failed or refused to pay that benefit, and the attorney has proven that that injured worker under the statute is entitled to that benefit. So it is not a matter of taking and making and getting the workers above 100% of what they're entitled. It's that the workers are below 100% and we're trying to get them anywhere close to it. So there is already a statutory cap on how many benefits can be given a worker, and it's up to the insurance company to make that determination or decide, no, we're going to incur costs in litigation. So I don't think that any of this, first of all, this is a modest bill, but secondly, even if it were an immodest bill, the system alone caps benefits, and so it can't be a runaway train as I see it.
Thank you.
Thank you. We really do have a lot of people to testify. Do you have a question for this panel?
Well, she spurred a question. I guess, where are we at in the MLAC process with this right now? And they make that recommendation to the board. So for the fees?
No, they make the, they would make, on this bill, this bill is at the MLAC process. It has been heard. It is up for review again, I believe, on March 6th for a review. There are a couple bills, and they've asked the parties to go and discuss and look for commonalities, which we're in the process of doing. The bill would then come to you. MLAC would make a recommendation on the bill. That is not a... And then it's up to you whether you take that recommendation or not. And if they don't make any recommendation, it's the bill sits with you. But that would be the process. The bill then, when passed, would then mandate to the board to review the fees every 2 years. So that that's the line.
Thank you. And we'll clarify that MLAC is purely an advisory role to the governor's office and to the legislature, but we... They're not a statutorily directed as far as having authority over the legislature's decisions or the governor's decisions or in this process. There's nothing that requires us to defer to MLAC. So
that's how I see it, too.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm not going to slow this down for, you know, lack of an MLAC position.
AFLAC, maybe?
So, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you
really
for your
appreciate
time.
It. With that, we will move on. Up next, I have Kristen Collins, Tricia Smith, and Matt Swanson. Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself, we don't have Kristen Collins. Okay. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please?
Sure. Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Matt Swanson. I represent the Service Employees International Union Locals 49 and 503. With over 65,000 members represented in the state of Oregon and professions ranging from CNAs who help move patients about in hospitals to wildlife biologists who may hang from a helicopter and help tag herds of elk, we and everything in between, we represent folks who often will get injured on the job. And I think... In our role as a labor union, we are not practitioners within the workers' compensation system, but we do see this as an important bill to make sure that workers are able to get back to work quickly, be healthy, and that there's an efficient process that recognizes some inherent disparities between the parties at play in that process. So an injured worker who oftentimes will have less means than, say, an insurance company will need someone to represent them. And because they are not necessarily on even footing, I think ensuring that the attorney representing them through that process can be compensated in a fair way is something that's important to us. We will often hear from workers who have been injured on the job. We cannot always offer them a great deal of help. As again, not being a practitioner in that system, we look to our friends who have helped bring this bill forward, those who represent injured workers, to provide adequate representation. So with that said, we're here and to offer our strong support for House Bill 2764. And I guess we would be open for any questions, or I can turn it over to my colleague.
Good morning. Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, the 20,000 educators who work in our Head Start associations, our K-12 system, and our community colleges. I am here in support of House Bill 2764 on behalf of our educational assistants. A large contingent of our membership are educational assistants who work in schools teaching special education students. For those of you who were here in the last session, you may remember our conversations about the violence that occurs in classrooms that our members experience every day. Many, many students who are disabled have, as a piece of their disability, violent behavior. Our members are responsible for keeping that student safe, the students around that student safe, and everyone else in the school. And that often means putting themselves in harm's way. And it often means that they are injured, and sometimes severely so. Our members work for very little money. They're hourly wage workers. They work for less than $20 an hour. And they don't have resources on their own to pay for an attorney to help them when they get injured at work. There is no one to help them when they get injured at work. I dare say if they had all the resources in the world, they would have trouble finding an attorney who could help them with this injury that they've sustained at work. The purpose of the workers' comp system, I want to remind you, is to help employers and workers get workers back to work as quickly as possible after a workplace injury. That means getting them the medical attention that they need as soon as they need it. Because when you delay medical attention, your medical problems compound. And sometimes a treatable injury becomes a lifelong disability. Our members want to work with their students. But they also want to know that if they get injured teaching their students, that they can get the medical attention they need, and that their families will not lose their homes as they try to get the time loss that they need while they're hurt. So we hope that you will pass House Bill 2764. My hair color will tell you I've been around this building a long time. And one thing I've seen is that sometimes in some issues, pendulums go from one extreme to another extreme. And that's what happened in 1989. We went from one extreme to the other extreme. And we have been afraid to touch it. I don't mean we, the collective we. I mean we, you, since then. And our members are getting hurt every day and need your help. So please pass House Bill 2764 so they can try to get the help they need. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Questions? Thank you very much for giving us your perspective. With that, I will call up Jay Frazier and John Powell.
Station board regulates how much they pay attorneys.
Isn't that Frazier?
It looks like Frazier.
On the other side.
Within the purview of the statute. So right now the statute doesn't allow.
Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is, excuse me, Chair Holby. Members of the committee, my name is Jay Frazier. Early morning. Apologize for the frog that suddenly appeared in my throat. My name is Jay Frazier. I represent Safe Corporation. My intent today is not to be too specific about the bill. I want to speak generally, and what I really want to do is raise some concerns that SAFE has about the bill. Before I do that, however, I'd like to talk a little bit about SAFE Corporation and the unique position that we hold in Oregon's Workers' Comp. Thank you, Chair Holby. Wow, that's service.
He does take tips.
Now his head just got really big.
She works for SAFE.
Thank you.
Maybe I should have got John one while I was in.
It's a little early for scotch, but I'm not sure he would resist.
What did I miss? What's so funny?
You guys are having
too
much fun.
To have had that.
It's too early.
SAFE is Oregon's state chartered workers' compensation insurer. We are a not-for-profit entity. We are created by statute. We are charged by statute to provide workers' compensation insurance to Oregon employers, as many Oregon employers, for as inexpensively as possible, while protecting the Industrial Accident Fund and using sound insurance principles. So it's we kind of sit in a balance all the time. Because as a public entity, we believe that SAFE exists to serve and protect the Oregon workforce.
We meet the needs of workers and employers. We believe this strengthens Oregon's economy. We have a lot of effort that we put into our loss control, our safety prevention. We feel it's very important to avoid injuries as much as taking care of the worker afterwards. So I sit before you from this unique perspective to offer a few comments on this proposed legislation and to raise a little bit of a process issue. First of all, SAFE is concerned about several aspects of the legislation, particularly changes to Section 1. We believe that this would change the statutory policy of the Oregon Workers' Compensation Act. The first change declares that it is the Workers' Compensation Act's policy to ensure that injured workers have access to adequate representation. The change makes lawyers beneficiaries of the Act. Please understand, I'm not suggesting that there isn't a place for lawyers in this process. The second change requires that the law should be read to presume a benefit for workers. Current statutory policy requires that the law be interpreted in an impartial and balanced manner. We believe that that is important. The process and the system is intended to make sure that employers and workers are protected in the same system. These two changes create fundamental policy shifts that we believe will upset a balanced system that has been working well since the reforms of the 1990s. The changes will have a fiscal impact to employers in Oregon, and nothing in this bill actually increases benefits for workers. There are some other problematic provisions from our perspective, from SAFE's perspective, the removal of caps on attorney fees, paying workers' attorneys just for requesting hearings, and allowing attorneys to earn more fees when they pursue an increase for attorney fees and penalties. SAFE Corporation does believe that these policy changes and the attorney fee changes proposed by HB 2764 will increase litigation and increase the adversarial nature of the workers' comp system. Litigation causes delays. Delays cause uncertainty for workers. It discourages claim settlement, and it creates an adversarial atmosphere that upsets a system where most claims are accepted and processed without controversy. Now, mind you, you heard a witness this morning who had a bad experience. SAFE Corporation processes over 35,000 claims a year. SAFE Corporation is not the only insurer. There are self-insureds and other insurance companies in the system, but we alone process over 35,000 claims a year and accept 30 of those. In 2013, we accepted 29,645, I believe. So most of those claims are processed quite without a problem. Now, we've talked about, I've heard you talk about MLAC this morning, and Representative Chair Holvey, you're correct. MLAC is an advisory board. They're statutorily created to provide advice to this body. That is their statutory mission. They were created after the reforms in 1990-91 as an opportunity to bring labor and management together to see if there wasn't a way to work out some of the ugly details. You've heard testimony about how very complex the system is, and I can't disagree with that. It is a complex system, which is why MLEC was created and why we believe there is some value in that. So what we would ask is that that you give MLAC the opportunity to meet. The chairs of MLAC, the co-chairs, have requested that the proponents of this bill and the parties who have some concerns get together and meet to see if we can, as Ms. Quinn mentioned, find some commonalities. I think that that's definitely possible. Right now we're scheduled to meet next Tuesday at SAFE Corporation in an attempt to see if we can hammer out some of this. So at that point, I will simply say thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I'll take questions. I won't say any questions, but.
Thank you. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Powell. I'm here before you representing Liberty Mutual. insurance companies. We're a writer of workers' compensation in Oregon. We would be a mere minnow compared to Safe Corporation in volume. However, I believe we are the largest insurer next to Safe Corporation, but smaller than self-insurers as a group. We read this bill to be broader than perhaps has been represented in terms of its scope of changing the workers' comp attorney fee system. It's been referenced about the Mahoney Hall meetings 25 years ago or whenever, 1990. There was a reason why attorneys weren't part of that meeting. Insurance companies weren't part of those meetings. Chiropractors weren't part of those meetings. And the reasons for the exclusions was that the system was falling apart very rapidly. And part of the problem was there were medical mills and there were legal mills that were filing causes in such rapid succession that the system was being eaten up by administrative costs, and workers' benefits were not all that high. The reforms changed that substantially to the point where they were able to raise the worker benefits and make the injured worker and the benefit structure the key proponent or the key part of the workers' compensation system. Since then, there have been revisions statutorily on attorney fees because it was determined they were too tight, the system was too tight. You'll have to ask others. I still think there are annual adjustments to attorney fees, and I don't know how to answer the six. It's been 16 years. I'm pretty sure there have been adjustments to attorney fees as provided in the statute. If you look at the bill in front of you on page 10, to this, the attorney fees involving one section on line 31 of page 10, existing law, which is being eliminated, and a somewhat similar provision without caps is placed elsewhere, but it's the portion that's being eliminated. It says an attorney fee awarded pursuant to this subsection may not exceed $3,000 absent a showing of extraordinary circumstances. The maximum attorney fee awarded under this section shall be adjusted annually on July 1st by the same percentage increase as made to the average weekly wage defined in ORS 656. So I think there have been some adjustments to attorney fees as have gone along, and others in the workers' comp division and others could answer that much better and exact than I can. At the top of that same page, page 10, you can see that attorney fees would be due if, on line 4, the employer or insurer does not fully prevail on all issues raised. So if there were three issues and they prevailed on two, they would still have to pay whatever would be considered a reasonable attorney fees. And again, I agree with Safe Corporation. This is fair game to consider the attorney fees structure and what attorneys are paid. But this is different than the civil system. It is an enclosed system. And I think the committee really needs to know exactly, one, what the policy is you're changing to, and two, what costs will go up through the system as a result of doing that. And I think there are methods of finding both of those, answers to both of those statements. One, what does the bill actually do? And two, how much will it cost going forward? It's pretty simple for an insurer to add the costs and send out the bills. But again, the system has to work for all parties, and in this case, particularly the injured worker, to pay enough to get counsel, but not open it up to the extent that we go back to the way it was. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate that testimony. Question, Representative Doherty.
Okay. The question I have is, I know that fees are capped on the injured workers end of it, but are the fees capped for the insurance company lawyers?
Chair Holvey, Representative Doherty, I don't believe there is a cap on the defense side. The defense, I have an article here that I found, well, not directly on point. It deals with what the state pays for employment related legal fees when a state worker files an employment claim. And there have been some large ones recently. And so the local paper here did a story, and they actually got down to how much the defense fees that the state pays are versus how much did the plaintiff collect. And in this case, lawyers paid to the state's lawyers, the defense lawyers, was 36.8% of the total amount spent. And to the plaintiff's side, lawyers, was 10.7%. So again, there's usually a disparity in that when an action is filed, the defense side, those lawyers have to take action. I mean, they can't say, well, that's just not important. They have to work that file, open a file on it. So they get handle as many files as they can, but those costs add up. And so I think traditionally, in the scope of things, the defense costs are greater than the plaintiff award.
But still,
in almost any line,
their fees are not capped.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment, really, that I will... it's in response to Ms. Frazier's testimony, which... and I hope that my comment is delivered as professionally as you did your testimony. But I have some profound issues with it. In fact, it saddens me. This is the legislature. All of us disagree. This is a place where different opinions come and fuse together and be heard, and I respect that. I respect the right to your opinion. I hope you respect my right to mine. But some of your issues, particularly with respect to Section 1 and how that language makes attorneys the beneficiary of it, as though the right to counsel, the lawyer's a beneficiary, as opposed to the person who would otherwise have to navigate this remarkably complex system without the aid of counsel. And just, I think the general sentiments about the role of attorneys in the workers' compensation system, I think it's just sad, and especially coming in an official testimony on behalf of SAFE. It's somewhat astonishing to me that SAFE seems to have that perspective about the right to plaintiff's counsel or claimant's counsel in the workers' compensation process. It's sad. It saddens me very much. Again, I respect the right to your opinion and SAFE's opinion, but I disagree with it profoundly. And I think it is telling that that is SAFE's perspective on claimant counsel. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Frazier.
Other questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to get a hold of this because I'm not an attorney, and I haven't stayed at a Holiday Inn in a while, so I'm a little slow right now. So I'm kind of trying to get a bigger picture of the whole process and stuff, because this would be an individual filing a claim, which is a headache. I've been hurt on the work, on the job. I worked in the woods. I've been hit by a log, hauled out in an ambulance and everything, and actually never filed a claim against it. Even I went back to work a week and a half later. Everybody told me I was crazy and should have went milked it for 6 months and everything else, was the comments made to me. But I'm seeing where somebody needs help in this, and it looks like there was some adjustment there, but it doesn't appear to be enough. But if you were hurt on the job and it was due to neglect, then you would go and file a civil action against your employer at that point. So basically SAFE, Liberty, is what they're doing is providing for your time off and everything, and your lost wages and all of that is what your job is, correct? And then if there was if it happened because of misconduct, because they were running old cables or something like that, and a log fell on me for that reason, then I would have to go and take a civil action against my employer for not monitoring safety? Or how would that work for me as an employee?
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener. Generally, workers' compensation is considered to be an exclusive remedy. So we would, workers' compensation insurers would pay for if someone was had a disability as a result of the injury, then they would be paid what's called a permanent partial disability amount. And so they would get a rating for that. So there generally is not any right of civil action. And in fact, the workers' compensation system generally was intended to be a bargain between employers and workers, so that workers would get medical benefits, time loss, and some payment for any kind of a permanent injury. They'd be taken care of. Because originally, this was civil litigation. Originally, workers, you know, back in 1912, before the Oregon legislature created a workers' compensation system, they had no remedy. So it's really kind of, it's been considered the grand bargain between labor and management to provide for workers, and also then to assure some certainty for employers that they're not going to end up in civil litigation.
Describe the system.
Questions, Representative Fagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I'll borrow my colleague, Representative Barton's preface, because it was so gracious and kind and allowed him to, you know, give his testimony in full force. I, too, have some issues. Just as a kind of an initial comment, the workers' compensation system is an enormous, enormous benefit to Oregon business owners, to employers. Just taking the example of my testimony, if my mom had been a patron of the bar and had fallen into a hole and fell in the parking lot, that employer would have had a very different situation, that business would have had a very different situation than the fact that she was an employee. So it is an enormous benefit to businesses in Oregon to have this exclusive remedy, no matter, you know, the whole, you know, there shouldn't have been a hole in the parking lot, enormous benefit. So when you talk about balance in your testimony, and then we learned from Representative Doherty's question and Mr. Powell that there's no cap on the defense fees, and because my question was going to be kind of asking your process of hiring your defense lawyers, kind of knowing, having been at a larger law firm in Portland and knowing that those fees were not capped, and I guarantee you those rates have gone up every year in the past 16 years. There's not been any stagnation. In particular, Mr. Powell, I'm not sure that the evidence, even in the Oregon courts, supports your position that defense costs are greater. In other circumstances, for example, just a standard employment case where maybe a plaintiff's attorney wins and then goes and seeks attorney's fees from the court, and this is, again, outside of workers' compensation, I've many times as a defense attorney defended those petitions, and the case law is very clear that we don't get to say, well, you know, in fact, they would often ask for our fees for the defense attorney to show, well, gosh, if it's unreasonable for the plaintiff's attorney to be getting X $100 per hour, why is it not unreasonable for that? And so actually, I don't think there's any support in the courts to say that defense costs are somehow more valuable or greater. In fact, now that I am doing also plaintiff's work in my own practice, I've learned that there's a lot more background work that goes into when you actually represent the worker before you even file the claim, before the defense counsel even knows there's something going on. So there's a whole lot of work that even leads up to that moment. So I take issue, and I actually just think the Oregon courts don't support the idea that somehow defense costs are more valuable or greater. I think the fact is, you know, if we're talking about balance and a benefit and a bargain for both, that should be reflected in the fact that the counsel to both parties is valued equally. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When it comes to, I think you said there were 35,000 claims every year. How many of these claims actually end up being litigated like this?
And the last statistic, Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, The last statistics that I saw for Safe Corporation were 2013 statistics, and it was, I want to say, 2,900 and some change actually ended up appearing.
Okay. Follow up. The attorneys that Safe would pay for the employee, the injured employee, they basically have a cap on that then as far as how much Safe will pay out to them, regardless of whether they win the case or lose the case.
Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, I will tell you that though I have worked for Safe Corporation for 20 years, I am not an expert in the attorney fee area. I spent most of my time on the insurance side of things, but it is my understanding that the attorney fees are in large measure determined by statute and then awarded by the administrative law judges. So there is a certain level. So SAFE would then pay an attorney fee as we are ordered to pay it.
Follow up. These are private sector attorneys that would be hired to defend the employee. So they wouldn't be safe attorneys that SAFE has on staff. So has that ever been considered to have attorneys on staff at SAFE to defend the employer in those situations, or the employee? I'm sorry.
Chair Holvey and Representative Barreto, I don't think that we've ever considered that, and it would probably create a conflict for the lawyers within the corporation
I've never seen attorneys have conflict. We get along very well. I'm just thinking from a standpoint of making it equitable. You know, in there, if we're looking at fairness and fairness for the employer, for the employee, and keeping costs down, because I think that's paramount in this whole issue. And what I see the other way is this is going to increase costs to the employer and to those who work in Oregon.
If I may, Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, there has been, we've toyed with the concept of having something similar to a public defender's office, you know, staffing so that somehow the system would staff injured worker attorneys in a similar fashion. I mean, it's been something just literally thrown around and as a, well, what if?
Please, one more.
Yeah, but I think attorneys, and we have a couple here, when they take a case, I mean, they have to, I mean, your whole job is to defend the person that you've taken on, the client. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about conflict, even if you're in the same organization, you still have the responsibility of defending that or doing that job that you have there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brett.
It's illegal.
We might have to talk about this offline. There's quite a bit going on. I'm happy to try and walk through it I understand it.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Kinnemer, question?
Actually, if I could, more comment.
Comment?
I guess, first of all, I wanted to thank you, Ms. Frazier, for the courage to come. And I think a remarkably good presentation. And I guess I wanted to add some historical context to this discussion. As many of you know, I served 10 years of hard time in the previous century across the hall. And it's germane to our discussion today because 1990 I was here. I started in 1987. And what we did is we had biannual wars called workers' comp. And they were horrific, if I may say so. Both sides had big artillery. They remind me of some of the things that we read about in the news about what's going on in Afghanistan. And we legislators got caught in the middle, and it was hell on wheels. And in 1990, if I remember correctly, I may have some of these details slightly off, but in generalities, my recollection is we were number two in the United States for workers' compensation costs. And The attorneys were the most prominent lobbying force in the legislature, fueled in part by this. Chiropractors had a huge, this is nasty because I usually am very supportive of chiropractors, but in my mind, in the mind of many, they were dramatically abusing the system, and they were benefiting enormously and costing enormous amounts of money. And that was what Mahonia Hall was about, were attorney fees and about chiropractors principally, although there were a lot of other factors. And through great animosity and difficulty and storm and stress and ugliness and everything imaginable, Mahonia Hall came to a resolution. And as I recall, it was 16 to 14. So it was not a Thrillville experience, but it was what happened. And since that time, it's been a remarkably different process. And it was interesting to me to return to this body in 2009. And I was quite shocked when Representative Schaffler, who was then the chair, said we would not hear these bills until they had gone through IMLAC. And frankly, I was a little appalled because I thought, we're the legislature, we should hear these bills. But I must say, after seeing that work, to have this balanced body, they are not the final judge, we are, but they make a recommendation and they have a discussion, and they have a discussion about among people who thoroughly understand the situation. I'm not an attorney. I understand some pieces of this. Other pieces I don't understand, and frankly, it's pretty darn convoluted and complicated, I think, is a fair statement. And I think to have that feedback is an immensely helpful thing. And what IMLAC has essentially done is come to a compromise position most of the time. Now, I think that's helpful feedback to those of us that are non-experts. And I think it also helps slow the process down. And it keeps us from getting into this adversarial war where each session, it's let's take turns to see who can make headway. I don't think this is a headway decision. This is a concern for workers decision. And we need to make sure that people are well taken care of and that they are serviced well and that they have opportunity to justice and fairness and quality treatment. And that is done in a way that is responsible and cost-effective. And frankly, we have been doing remarkably better. But back in 1990, we were losing huge in the job market because workers' comp costs were literally killing employment in this state. And I think we need to remember, sometimes we need to recall some of this history. And I would, and incidentally, when I co-chaired with Schaffler in 2011, we continued with that. And as if I recall, I think Representative Doherty also, when she chaired last session, said, let's go to IMLAC first. It's not the final judge. I think we're the final judge and jury. But let's have some careful discussions about this, because this is a delicate balance, and if it gets out of balance, it's a war to the bottom, not to the top, in my view. And I appreciate the indulgence. I know I've waxed a little long, but I think we need to have this historical perspective that we've been to hell. There's no need to go back there, in my perspective.
Thank you. I have no intention of returning to hell. And
It
was not enjoyable, I will tell you that.
And IMLAC is reviewing the worker comp bills that will be before this committee. IMLAC has also had a lot of transitions going on with it now.
Yes, it has.
And
they're not up to speed as they should be, and I would never disagree with that.
So I'm sure they'll have opportunities to weigh in on this process, but again, I appreciate that, but I can also appreciate that we have some issues with that we're hearing about today that have not been addressed since 1990. So I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much for your testimony this morning. We really do need to move on. We've got several more people. So up next, I'd like to have Sarah Basler, Joe Basler, and Graham Trainer. Bob Livingston. Could you go ahead and come up, too? And if you could keep your comments short and not repeat things that have already been said, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Basler. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association in support of House Bill 2764. We see this legislation as an important tool to ensure that injured nurses and other workers have access to attorneys to help them navigate the increasingly complex workers' compensation system. ONA is proud to represent over 13,000 nurses around the state in Oregon. Nurses are the largest group of healthcare workers in the state and nationally, and work in a variety of practice settings, including hospitals, home health, small clinics, corrections, school-based health, and community-based public health. Unfortunately, like a variety of frontline workers, nurses face a variety of occupational hazards on the job and have a higher than average rate of injury on the job. Often this can require time off work and interfacing with the workers' compensation system. As injured nurses contact us when they encounter these situations, our advice is that they work with a workers' compensation nursing and other healthcare professionals face a lot of musculoskeletal injuries. These are the types of injuries that can occur from lifting and moving patients. Some of you may have heard a recent series on NPR that highlighted the rate and the impact of these injuries for nurses and other healthcare workers. These are injuries that can lead to chronic pain, time off work. For nurses, they frequently lead to needing to transfer to a different type of unit. They're career-altering injuries, and in some cases can be career-ending. As nurses face that type of injury, we think it's absolutely critical that there are expert attorneys available to assist them. We think that this legislation helps ensure that that is the case. So thank you for your consideration, and ONA urges your support of House Bill 2764.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Joe Basler. I represent Oregon AFSCME. We represent 24,000 workers around the state. We represent the reason why I'm testifying on this bill. We were very supportive of 2764. We have workers in corrections, the state hospital, road crews, constantly being injured. And as a union, we focus our law expertise around contract negotiations, that kind of work. When someone gets injured, we want to point them in the right direction of an attorney to help them, but we don't handle the workers' comp claims for the union. So that list that we usually say you should go talk to one of these attorneys is shrinking every single year. Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian used to be on that list, and now he's Labor Commissioner and won't take any more clients. So we've got to get more attorneys who are willing to help our workers when they're injured. And so I don't want to say any more because everyone's already been said, but that's our perspective and why we think it's important.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Graham Traynor, representing the Oregon AFL-CIO, and the Oregon AFL-CIO represents over 300,000 working Oregonians and consistently supports efforts to defend, improve, and expand critical protections for workers, and we believe that HB 2764 does just that by expanding options for injured workers making claims in what you've already heard a lot about, which is an increasingly complex workers' compensation system. Much of what I had prepared has already been said, but I'll just say, and to dovetail on my colleague's comment about the number of attorney options out there, it's my understanding that there are fewer than 100 lawyers representing injured workers currently in the state, which obviously often leads to workers representing themselves. And when that happens, naturally, the expertise is lacking, the cases get bungled, and the system gets backlogged. We do appreciate the outreach and work done by proponents of this bill, and believe it's a really important step towards expanding access to critical services and representation for injured workers in a very complex system. And we, the Oregon AFL-CIO, urge the committee support for HB 2764. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Livingston. I represent the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I've had the honor and privilege of being in the building since 1995. During that time, two people that were huge mentors of mine that are fortunately have escaped this fine establishment were Bob Shipwreck and Pat West. Early in my days, they simply told me, you know, focus on PERS, collective bargaining, other issues, and that, stay away from workers' comp. The reason they did that was not as a joke, but in all seriousness, this is extremely complex, difficult work. Here are some of the terms. If you're an employee, or for that matter, an employer, you have to understand: major contributing cause, pre-existing conditions, degenerative processes, expert witnesses, and the list goes on. We have a problem right now in the system. We don't have a problem. This bill's not going to change some of those things that are in statute. But we have a problem from an access standpoint. If you're a worker right now, we have an aging population of very fine workers' comp attorneys. It's a complex system. Complexity doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. All of the points that have been made today, do we have a good system? Yes, we have a good system. Are we able to you know, hold down cost and that balance that we have? We do. However, I believe it's incumbent upon this body that when there is a definite demographic problem, particularly on the plaintiff side and a shrinking pool of attorneys, it needs to be addressed before it comes to that crisis situation so that we don't emulate the wars of the past. And so while I think there will be a lot of people that would like to distract and perhaps pivot onto other issues, this really is about workers making sure they have access to good, capable, competent attorneys that understand Chapter 656 better than most people. And so with that, I would urge you to make sure that before the session ends, we address the problem that we have, because we do have a shrinking population of excellent attorneys that are integral to this system. And if we want to continue with this system, we're going to need to make some addresses in compensation, because not all compensations have been escalated year to year. And there's a fundamental problem that we face. So that, with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions, urge you to work this bill, but we need resolution on that so we don't repeat the days of hell. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much. Up next, Art Towers, Chris Moore, and Jody Phillips.
Jody Phillips Polich. I have two last names. I'm not too sensitive if one gets left out. I represent injured workers here in Oregon. I have for over 20 years. My hair is not quite as gray as some, and I can't say that I go back to, I was in the system, I was around back in 1990, but not practicing law. I was in law school at that time. I just have a few comments that I'd like to make. First, this bill about attorney fees isn't really about, I mean, obviously it does result in fees being paid to attorneys, but it's really about access for workers to representation. As you've heard, this bill doesn't solve all the problems in the workers' compensation system. It's intended to fill a few gaps and to compensate those of us who do this work that we love, because candidly, most of us do this work because we love it. I have to confess, not written down on my piece of paper here, but I've found actually that in working on this bill, that I've had to focus a lot on what I don't get paid for, and to be candid, it's kind of depressing. I'm generally, most people who know me will tell you I'm a Pollyanna, and it's been surprising to me how it's really made me think about things I don't, you know, that I don't tend to dwell on, which tells me how important this bill really is. If I'm a new lawyer coming into this system, there's got to, you can't be representing people for free. This act is about access. It intends to provide workers with an attorney, but not a free attorney. We should get paid for the work we do. The point of the act is to provide that representation at no cost to the injured worker. As you heard comments from many of the people that spoke today, is these workers don't have those resources to pay. And even if they did have the resources to go out and hire a lawyer, the act actually prohibits those of us that do this type of work from accepting payment. a worker can't come to me and say, I'll pay you to help me. Mm-hmm. I have to say, no, I can't. I only get paid when the law says I get paid. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't matter. That's a matter of it's a hearing, appellate work, nothing. We cannot take money. Somebody can't call me up and say, can I pay you out for an hour of your time? And believe me, it happens. But we're not allowed to do that. So all of our fees come from Chapter 656. We get them only if the legislature or the board says we do, or WCD. We don't get them anywhere else. The other important thing is I heard Representative Barreto talk a lot about costs. What's interesting about costs in this system is that no matter how good of a lawyer I am, I can never get an injured worker more benefits than what the Act provides. There's a cap. We can't go above 100%. I don't get to be brilliant and come up with something and get the worker something that our legislature hasn't said they're entitled to. What we do is we really function almost as a police in the system. We ensure that workers get the benefits that the legislature is intended to provide. And I like to think about it as accountability. You know, part of our job is accountability for insurers to make sure that the workers of this state are getting the benefits they're entitled to. And to do that, workers need access to lawyers who want to do this work and are committed to doing this work. So thank you for considering this bill.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Chris Moore. I am an attorney from Eugene. I've been doing this for 32 years. I'm part of the bar that's fading out. My partner's 65 years old. She's going to be retiring probably in 4. I'll probably be going out in 8. You've heard a lot about the complexity of the Act. And procedurally, it's complicated. Medically, it's complicated. Insurers are well aware of that. What I see on a regular basis from insurers, self-insured employers, is I get a file 6 to 8 months into the claim processing, and they've already hired an attorney. And that attorney is visiting with doctors and setting the case up for the employer side before the worker has ever gotten involved, and they've already started to lose the case. All what we're asking is that we find some places where we do work and we are successful and we don't get paid, or we get paid far too little to make it worth our while to get paid in those areas. The underlying problem is 5 years ago, the gap between the Department of Consumer Business Services keeps excellent statistics. There's a gap between what claimant attorneys were making 5 years ago and what the defense lawyers were getting paid for their fees and costs, and that gap was about $12 million. Most recent statistics, that gap has grown to $16 million. And what we're asking of the regulators is, if you're going to regulate our fees, we don't have the free market option that the defense side does, mm-hmm. is that you regulate it so that we have the ability to compete on behalf of our workers to get other attorneys to represent them. And that's really what this bill is about. And whether the system's complex or not, that's a public policy decision, but if it's complex, our folks need help. Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arthur Towers. I'm the political director for the Oregon Trial Lawyers. And as many of you know, over the years, I've really devoted a lot of my adult life to fighting for workers. And when I started there, I was the young guy coming in to help workers. I really am devoted to that cause, and it's been a joy coming to work with the workers' compensation lawyers. They're very, very devoted to workers as well. And once again, I'm the young guy, so it's pretty fabulous. the points that haven't been made so far that I just want to wrap up with are, one, what the goal here is to align incentives for the insurance industry so that they get the payment to the worker right the first time. And if we can get that process set up where the what I believe the employers want, which is to get their workers compensated, to get their workers back on the job, get their workers the medical care they need, and get it done right the first time and speedily. That's the goal here. Right now, the incentives are all messed up to make it to provide incentives to the insurance industry to slow it down, delay and deny, that sort of thing. So hopefully this we get that done. Second thing is I believe everyone here, employers, the insurance industry, is, you know, labor, us, we're all dealing in good faith, and, you know, cynicism is our biggest enemy in this building, I think. But I was discouraged to hear opposition to workers having adequate representation. The third point I wanted to make is about the overall cost, and this is an important one, because you've been talking about keeping costs down and keeping things under control, and you know, for good reason. The overall cost of the workers' compensation system is more than $800 million a year. The fees for injured workers' attorneys are 2 to 3% of that, 2 or 3% of the overall $800 million plus dollars. So again, just to kind of keep it in perspective, that's what we're talking about here, and the sort of increases that you know will come into play, I think, are modest. And then finally, I've spent more time on workers' comp issues here in the last 7 months than I have in 20 years in labor, and learning about the stuff on these charts and listening to the process, and having presented a number of times at MLAC on this issue. The one thing that that I would urge you to do more so than vote for this bill is do whatever you can for yourself and your loved ones not to get injured on the job. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Fagan, question?
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. You talked about the entire system being $800 million. Do you guys have any data talking about how much of the system is attorney's fees? And I know it's a little bit complicated because obviously I'm sure SAFE has in-house attorneys versus also hiring out. So I'm sure in some places it's a little bit hard to decipher out. But do you have any sense of how much, is there a percentage of fees paid by defense versus fees paid by the system to defense versus fees paid to claimants?
Sure, Holvey. The most recent figures that we could find were as of 2012. The fees, and I want to make sure we're comparing apples to apples, and we'll need to go back and look at the reports to determine that in terms of like fees and costs. But roughly in excess of $30 million on the defense side and less than $20 on the injured worker side.
Follow up quickly, Mr.
Follow up.
And in comparing apples to apples, was that paid to outside? I mean, is that like awarded fees as opposed to, like I said, like SAFE has, on staff sophisticated people who are doing this who probably are not captured in that number versus the injured worker doesn't necessarily have, without an attorney, has no kind of sophisticated person working on their behalf.
Chair Holvey, Representative Fagan, the fees are collected, the data is collected by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. SAFE is required to report their attorney fees, and the private defense counsel, who are usually representing self-insured employers and other insurers, are required to report their fees and costs. All of our attorney fees are captured because they have, since they have to be approved by somebody, a judge, the board, a court of appeals, Supreme Court, whoever, they're published in a document, and the department gets all of those.
Here, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Arthur, I wanted to make sure I heard you correctly at the end of your testimony there. I think you're telling all employees and workers out there that not to rely on us or MLAC, but they better get themselves some AFLAC.
Chair Holvey.
That doesn't deserve a response.
We do have some problems with this committee, so.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a correction. Just parts of the committee.
Further correction.
And it varies from day to day.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Really, a comment, not just to this panel, but to anyone who might be listening. I've made my opinions on this pretty clear. I have some perspective, some background that informs my my values and opinions on this bill. Having said that, I don't want to I want to acknowledge the eloquence and force of my friend Representative Kenemer's comments. He's been a mentor to me since I've come in this building. My neighbor from Clackamas County, and he's a measured man. He rarely speaks with such force, and I just, you know, sometimes when you're in the minority, it might feel like you aren't being heard, but I wanted to state that I do hear what he's saying and acknowledge it. And to the extent, this is still an ongoing discussion, to the extent the proponents and opponents, if I can be of any help to this, I would like to, I want to see this happen, and I do acknowledge his concerns. If I can play any role in this that is constructive, I'm happy to do so. I'll clear my time at any time, but I'd like to see this done. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Holvey, Representative Barton, to that end, I also wanted to defend MLAG's honor to at least a certain degree. So this advisory body is comprised of 10 people, five labor, five management. Right now, they're down three vacancies. At least one of the other people, and I think two of them are brand new to the process. And so because of the turnover, we've actually had to go back and present to MLAC, I think, at four different occasions on these ideas. And as you can, you know, as you can see from the bill, each one of the individual points is kind of arcane. And so MLAC's working on this, MLAC's struggling with this. We're patiently waiting their decision, reporting back on Friday. And again, this is the body that makes the decision. And if MLAC stumbles, then this body is the one that has to pick it up. But those folks, like, God bless them for serving on MLAC. Let me leave it there.
Thank you. And I, you know, I totally respect and support the MLAC process and look forward to, you know, any recommendations they may bring to us, certainly. But they aren't, you know, statutorily in a position to pass laws and aren't elected to the positions to make these decisions. So that falls upon us. But I do have a question. You know, I think Mr. Powell brought up an issue, or at least a point, that there was in statute a way to adjust attorney fees, you know, what annually, I guess, was what the term was. And I guess my question is, you know, I mean, listening to that, it's kind of apparent to me, your position is that adjustment hasn't really had the impact to enable attorneys to participate, I guess, in a fiscally sound way in this process of defending or helping workers in this process. And so, you know, I'm guessing your position is that system has not been adequate in keeping up with the times.
Chair Holvey, there are, I hate to make the attorney fees complicated, but they are. So there's a group of attorney fees where we get paid out of our client's compensation, and those are controlled by the board through rulemaking. And those have not been adjusted in 16 years, okay? And what this bill will do is to compel them to at least review the fees, have a board meeting about it, and review them every year. There are also a group of fees in the statute that are capped, and they go up by a small amount each year. The problem is that the cap bore no relationship to what the actual work entailed in the particular issue. And so increasing a fee that was too small to begin with by a cost of living measure doesn't leave us with a viable economic system for our business.
Chair Holvey, I mean, the other piece here is that, again, it's about aligning the incentives, so making sure that more of it, less of it comes out of the injured worker's pocket when they have to, you know, fix an insurance company mistake, and instead of having the insurance industry pay a little bit more for making the mistakes. And then the final piece on that point is that oftentimes what we're talking about here in terms of correcting errors on the part of the insurance company, we're oftentimes not talking about a ton of money in any one individual case. We're talking about, you know, they should have been paid, workers should have been paid $400 instead of $300 a week. And the amount of work it takes, you know, that's like life and death. It's a, you know, mortgage payment, it's a car payment, it's food on the table. But the amount of work that it takes to capture that $100 is way more than, you know, the percentage that an attorney would make. And so it's like that sort of thing that we're trying to correct here. So thank you.
Thank you. It's very helpful. I think that big picture. And to your knowledge, has MLAC tried to address this since 1990, this disparity?
Chair Holvey, we brought an attorney fee bill in 2009, I believe, and we got significantly watered down, and we were able to get it through MLAC and passed both houses of the legislature and signed by the governor. But since then, that gap that I was talking about has just gotten bigger. Mm-hmm. It didn't actually reduce the gap.
So that 2009 legislation didn't really solve the problem?
No.
All right, thank you. Any other questions of this group? Not seeing any. Thank you so much for helping us understand this. Colleagues, as you can see, this is a pretty tough bill to get our hands around. I'm going to carry over the public hearing on House Bill 2764 till Monday morning at 8 a.m., and I had hoped to have the Workers' Comp Division come in and provide us, some background for us to consider and have an opportunity to ask questions of the Workers' Comp Division to wrap up this public hearing. So I think it's appropriate that we don't have time to do it today. So they've agreed to be here at 8 a.m. on Monday morning. So we're looking forward to that lively discussion. And if you have some outstanding questions about the worker comp division and how this bill interplays with the worker comp system, you know, think about those questions over the weekend while you have nothing to do. And we'll see you here on Monday morning. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2764. And anything else, Jen?
No, that's it.
If the committee could stand by for a few minutes, I just have a couple comments for them offline. So with that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor.